Listeria has been in the news, and we've received a lot of requests to address the situation. The government agencies are warning Americans to check your fridge and freezer, as a massive meat recall linked to possible listeria contamination has impacted hundreds of ready-to-eat meals sold at major grocery store chains across the US, including Walmart, Trader Joe's, and Target. The CDC reports that since July, there have been 59 cases of listeriosis with 10 deaths. As well as the usual warnings for pregnant women and the elderly, the FDA has announced that listeria could be fatal for children. However, the bacterium Listeria monocytogenes is described as widely spread in the environment. We are all exposed to the microbe, so why would it only kill such a tiny minority of us? Something doesn't add up here. And in this video, I'll reveal what that is in some of the key scientific publications.
New records shows Boar's Head processing plant in Virginia had repeated federal violations. Inspectors found mold, insects, liquid dripping from ceilings, and meat and fat residue on the walls, floor, and equipment. At least 9 people have died. Dozens have been across 18 states, including one person here in Arizona. Boar's Head stopped production at the plant in late July and recalled more than 7 million pounds of product. The company says it will immediately address all issues raised by government inspectors.
And how concerning is listeria? Is this something that everyone should be taking seriously?
It is. It is a serious infection for those, especially at the extremes of age, so newborns, frankly, pregnant moms, those that might have weakened immune systems because of medications they might be on. So it is serious for those who might have weakened or impaired immune systems or who might be medically higher risk.
The isolation of the infecting organism is not easy. We found this to remain true even after we had established the cause of the disease. Murray et al. On the claim that Listeria monocytogenes was pathogenic in 1926. The Wikipedia page for Listeria monocytogenes states that it is the species of pathogenic bacteria that causes the infection listeriosis. It can grow and reproduce inside the host cells and is one of the most virulent foodborne pathogens. 20 to 30% of foodborne listeriosis infections in high-risk individuals may be fatal, responsible for an estimated 1,600 illnesses and 260 deaths in the United States annually. Listeriosis ranks third in total number of deaths among foodborne bacterial pathogens, with fatality rates exceeding even Salmonella species and Clostridium botulinum. These are some serious allegations against the Listeria microbe. So let's see how this is claimed to be. In the 1920s, the bacterium Listeria monocytogenes was discovered. Originally called Bacterium monocytogenes, the genus was renamed Listeria in honor of Joseph Lister. Lister was a 19th century surgeon, famous for being a pioneer in antiseptic surgery. According to Wikipedia, his most important contribution was recognizing that putrefaction in wounds is caused by germs, in connection to Louis Pasteur's then novel Germ Theory of Fermentation. The word putrefaction came into use around 600 years ago, meaning process of decomposition of organic matter, and derived from old French and Latin words that meant to make rotten or to be rotten. It is one of those words that had nothing to do with germ theory, but it has been co-opted into the paradigm, with Wikipedia parroting the nonsense that microbes are the cause of tissue breakdown, rather than the response to it. While we are on Joseph Lister, another time you may have heard the name is the mouthwash product that was named after him called Listerine. This range comes replete with many chemicals, but the manufacturer's website claims that Listerine is, quote, good for me. Now, where have we heard that marketing slogan before? We can also see some familiar reassurances that it is good due to 1. Germ kill, 2. Recommended by professionals, and 3. Backed by science.
Because I represent science.
Anyway, it's helpful to understand that we are deep inside germ theory territory when it comes to anything named after Lister. The establishment has it that Listeria monocytogenes was first described by Everett Murray in 1924, based on 6 cases of sudden death in young rabbits, and published a description with his colleagues in 1926. This was a paper titled A Disease of Rabbits Characterized by a Large Mononuclear Leukocytosis. In the introduction, the authors state that in May 1924, 6 cases of rather sudden death in rabbits were observed, though no direct cause of the evidently acute toxic or infectious condition could be discovered in any of them. Of note, these were all laboratory rabbits in confinement, and evidently, the allegedly discovered disease had not been observed in the wild. However, the quote cases then became easier to identify, and within a year or two, they had dead animals everywhere, allegedly due to the new disease. The authors reported that the post-mortem material consists of 78 cases of natural disease, 65 rabbits and 13 guinea pigs, and experimental infections produced in 128 rabbits, 12 guinea pigs, 8 rats, and 194 mice. As we will see, it is unclear how they could classify any of these as natural disease, but at least we have some experiments to analyse. Some of the game was given away when a few sentences later they mention cases in which the bacilli have not been found. A clear violation of Koch's first postulate being the microorganism must be found in abundance in all organisms suffering from the disease, but should not be found in healthy organisms. Other inconsistencies with the germ hypothesis was the statement that in experimentally infected rabbits, death was usually surprisingly sudden, and the animals would be found dead within an hour of having had every appearance of being well. It is hard to imagine how the bacteria would act that quickly and suggest that some other fatal toxin was at work. Additionally, the way they would induce these sudden deaths was by intravenous injection of bacterial cultures, something that would never happen in nature. In fact, when they tried natural exposure routes, it was admitted that infection by feeding was never successful in full-grown rabbits, even with large doses of cultures, which were very virulent intravenously. They reported, quote, success with infecting some of the baby rabbits by feeding, but earlier in the paper, it had already been disclosed that on several occasions, litters of emaciated young rabbits were removed to other quarters and given selected foods, and almost invariably made a good recovery. Such feeding experiments could not then be carried out on a large scale, but the impression gained was that really adequate food would terminate the epidemic. You would have thought such an observation indicated that they would have been wiser to focus on nutritional and/or other causes of disease. The authors also had problems finding the Listeria bacterium in many of the alleged cases. They reported that in the first 14 cases, the cultures invariably remained sterile, and only in one case were organisms seen, a few small gram-positive bacilli being found in smears from the omentum. They went on a more extensive search, but conceded that the cultures made from organs often remained sterile. Here we have a quantification of the aforementioned failure to satisfy Koch's first postulate. Forget about found in abundance. The bacterium was often not found at all. When it was found, the authors perhaps should have spent more time pondering their statement that the bacilli were not at first recognized as the cause of the disease, and it was thought that it might be a post-mortem or agonal invasion. In terms of claimed controls, they injected a sterile protein broth into the lung lining of one, yes, a total of one rabbit, and then killed it a mere 6 hours later for examination. The second claimed control was the injection of a different bacterial species, E. coli, into a rabbit's lung lining, again with euthanasia taking place at 6 hours. Obviously, these do not constitute valid controls for the experiments where the other rabbits were being injected with Listeria cultures via the intravenous route. Unfortunately, the authors ignored these fatal methodological flaws and apparently under the spell of germ theory concluded that the evidence brought forward in the body of this paper leaves no doubt that the bacillus we have described is the cause of the disease. There is another historical paper that warrants careful examination because of its claimed pivotal role in establishing Listeria as a human pathogen. It is stated that Listeria monocytogenes was not identified as a cause of foodborne illness until 1981. An outbreak of listeriosis in Halifax, Nova Scotia, involving 41 cases and 18 deaths, mostly in pregnant women and neonates, was epidemiologically linked to the consumption of coleslaw containing cabbage that had been contaminated with Listeria monocytogenes, contaminated sheep manure. The New England Journal of Medicine paper is titled Epidemic Listeriosis Evidence for Transmission by Food. As stated by Wikipedia, this was an epidemiological analysis, not an experimental study. Perinatal cases were defined as, quote, a compatible clinical illness in mother or child or both, accompanied by a positive culture for Listeria monocytogenes from the mother, the child, or the placental surface. An adult case was defined as one in which a positive culture for Listeria monocytogenes was obtained from either blood or spinal fluid. The authors then attempted to link the cases of illness and death to the consumption of coleslaw. Their first analysis, in the form of a case control survey, revealed no differences between cases and controls that suggested a common environmental source. Then, in what I would suggest was a dubious move, they decided to repeat the survey and pressed the participants on whether they could remember consuming coleslaw. This time, all of the cases and 40% of the controls said they had eaten some. Apparently, this convinced them that coleslaw was the culprit, so they took a sample of coleslaw that came from the refrigerator of one of the patients and found the same strain of Listeria that they found in the patient. Our investigators then deduced which farm the coleslaw cabbage was sourced from. Environmental samples were taken from the farm site, and wait for it, these samples have not yielded Listeria monocytogenes. With regard to the, quote, carriage survey, Listeria was detected in stool specimens or rectal swabs in 4 out of the 35 case families and 7 out of 101 control families. I would suspect that Listeria would be present in small amounts in even more people, if not all of us, but this depends on the sensitivity of the method being used for detection. Either way, once again, the findings were at complete odds with Koch's first postulate being the microorganism must be found in abundance in all organisms suffering from the disease, but should not be found in healthy organisms. However, as per the 1920s paper, the authors appeared to be afflicted with the same germ theory tunnel vision and concluded, our findings suggest that the source of infection during the large outbreak of listeriosis that we studied was the ingestion of raw vegetable products, specifically coleslaw, in the period before onset of illness. The pseudoscience on display in this paper is astounding. In summary, a dubious retrospective survey based on participants' recall found that all the cases had eaten coleslaw, but on the other hand, almost half of the control group had also eaten coleslaw. And to put this in full perspective, a single shipment of cabbage through the identified wholesaler weighed 2.25 tons, so it is likely that tens of thousands of people actually ate the product. Consider that the presence of Listeria monocytogenes was required to diagnose the cases, but it could also be found in the stool or rectums of well people. When it was found in the latter group, they were said to be carriers. In order to explain these inconsistencies, the paper's authors introduce what they suggest as a, quote, sound biological hypothesis, and it goes like this. 1. Contamination of vegetables with Listeria monocytogenes occurs on the farm. It is hard to know what they mean by contamination because the bacterium is commonly found in the environment. 2. Under conditions of prolonged cold storage, these products result in transient gastrointestinal colonization in some people. 3. Some people who carry the organism may then contract invasive listeriosis under unusual circumstances of host susceptibility, bacterial virulence, or both. Now, testing such a hypothesis in human experiments would not get past an ethics committee in the present day. However, that is beside the point, because they have formulated an unfalsifiable paradigm where the bacterium can be found in sick people who are deemed cases, and it can also be found in well people who are deemed asymptomatic carriers. We have come full circle back to the original 1926 study, where the finding of the bacterium in an organism is not an independent factor when it comes to disease. It is obvious that they have introduced terms such as unusual circumstances of host susceptibility or bacterial virulence to cover up this fact and keep the germ paradigm alive. A review article in 1988, Listeriosis, History and Actual Developments, somewhat ironically stated that Listeria monocytogenes and related species have been isolated frequently from all sorts of soil specimens in the wild and in the human and animal environment. Due to their excretion with animal and human fecal matter, they are a frequent dweller of superficial sewage and wastewaters. It appears to be a rather widely spread microbe found in all regions of the globe. Its role as a pathogen seems to be more or less accidental. This essentially sums up the issue. We have a bacterium that is widely found in the environment, as well as in the gut and feces of organisms such as humans. We are all ingesting it from time to time, and there is no evidence that it can invade and attack healthy tissue. If the microbes start proliferating in blood or other parts of the body, then it can only be said to be the response to compromised and dying tissue, not the cause of it. Using the 1980s epidemiological paper to claim that it is a foodborne, quote, pathogen is beyond the capabilities of the methodology they used. And keep in mind that the earlier experimental models required broths of the bacteria to be injected directly into the veins of small animals, something that does not reflect humans ingesting microbes. This is not to say that people do not get sick or can die from the clinical presentation that has been called listeriosis. But at most, Listeria monocytogenes is only associated with the disease state in question, not the cause of it. Something needs to compromise the organism's tissue first. The ingestion of toxic biological breakdown products, like that found in sewer water, can certainly be dangerous. So yes, if someone ingests contaminated water, then they can get sick. Additionally, food that has been handled incorrectly or is in a state of decomposition can also be toxic to humans. But blaming ubiquitous bacteria that may be associated with such phenomena is unwarranted. Like millions of people around the world, my family uses animal manure, including from sheep, to enrich the soil that is then used to grow our crops. We are not the least bit worried about whether the soil contains Listeria species bacteria. In fact, we expect it to. We also make our own coleslaw and eat it fresh on the same day. We have observed that even after one day in the fridge, the taste becomes bitter, so we do not consume it at that stage. This is not the sort of food that should be prepared in a factory and then stored for weeks before being consumed. Blaming the presence of microbes is ridiculous and only serves industries that are trying to sell, quote, solutions for the wrong suspect. During my last pregnancy in 2021, I consumed raw milk, unpasteurized cheeses, homemade coleslaws and cured meats to welcome one extremely healthy baby into our family. The advice I had received from the medical system was to avoid all of these foods, as the alleged germs that they came with were extremely dangerous. This is complete nonsense, and as we have seen, there is no evidence that microbes per se are to blame. When food is in question, then the quality of the food is the key factor. If you grow it organically, handle it correctly, and pay attention to the appearance and aromas, then you are in tune with nature. On the other hand, if your food comes from a factory and you have no idea how or when it was sourced and what chemicals went into it, then you are putting your health and life into someone else's hands. Of course, there are also other causes of illness, but unfortunately, due to the mistaken belief in germ theory, the medical establishment frequently overlooks these factors. They go on fishing trips for microbes, and when detected, wrongly attribute them as the cause rather than the response. As a wise doctor remarked last century, when it comes to our health, focusing our attention on battling microbes is a road to nowhere. Bacteria or microzyma, having developed, can disseminate, but the bug hunters are in for a protracted chase. Dr. Ulrich Williams, Terrain Therapy. If you enjoyed this video, please visit supportdrsam.com